All right. One way you're glad to get old. Another way it's not so glad. So. Genesis chapter 1. Lord willing, we will finish up at least to a degree this first chapter of Genesis today. In fact, we will go through the first two verses of chapter 2 just as an ending. However, next Lord's Day, and if need be, I don't know how long he will take to do it, but Brother Bruce is going to take the seventh day of the days of creation and expound upon it for us beginning next Lord's Day. And like I said, I don't know how long it will take, but Bruce, you can do whatever you feel like the Lord leads you to do, just to cover it as fully as you think it needs to be covered. So, but today we're going to be in the sixth day, and I think we already got into that last Lord's Day to some degree, at least to the first part of it. But God has created the heaven and the earth in the beginning. Before that, there was nothing but God. He was it. But in order to glorify Himself, and again, sometimes, and I think I preached on this some time back, the glory of the Lord and the glorification of God, if it was us glorifying ourselves, it would be a matter of pride. But with God, it's not so. It's not a matter of pride. Why not? Well, if it's true, that's right, it's true. That's who He is, or that's what He is. He is glory. And if He denied that glory, He would have to deny Himself. And God cannot deny Himself. The truth is, and I believe this with all my heart, and we might ask, well, you know, why did God decide to create the heavens and the earth and all things that are therein, and especially man? Why did God all of a sudden decide to do that? Well, He didn't do it all of a sudden, did He? It's part of that that we just are not able to comprehend about God, because He is infinite and we are finite. He is limitless and we are altogether limited. But God had to show forth His glory. And in order to do that, He had to create the heavens and the earth and all the hosts of both of them. Whether it be heaven or earth, He had to create to show forth His glory. And it was inevitable that that glory must come through. In other words, the glory of God is so great until it was not possible for that glory not to be made manifest. Now, God didn't need to make it manifest to Himself. But he does need to make it manifest to us. Can we comprehend that? No, not fully. Someday, maybe, we will. How far we will go in the, as far as the complete understanding that God has, I don't know. But we will find that out later. But we do know, as for the time being, God's glory is manifest in and by and through His creation. It's what it's for, is to manifest the glory of God. Show forth that which He is, and to be worshipped. And that glory, as you see that glory, this glory of God, you cannot help but worship Him. Right. We are made from glory to glory. That's why man was created, and especially is it so with His redeemed people. We are brought from glory to glory, from faith to faith. And so we're learning here the very first foundational principles of God's creation and the glory that is in that creation. So the first day, He creates the heaven and the earth, and He calls forth light. Now, I don't think we can properly say that on that first day He created light, because that light that He called forth was already there in Himself. He is light. He is the light of the world, right? For John chapter 1. He is the light of the world. And so that light, He created the heavens and the earth, but that light that He called forth dispelled the darkness that was there. And once again, all you have to have for darkness is to remove the light or withhold the light. Anytime you withhold light, you have darkness. It's inevitable. For the absence of light is darkness. And so, as Christ says again, if the light that be in you be darkness, how great is that darkness? So here, the first day, this is what happens. The second day, then, He creates a firmament. Divides the heaven from the earth, so to speak. There is a firmament between heaven and earth. And divided the waters from under, that which are under the firmament, from the waters which were above the firmament. And then the waters gathered into one place and the dry land appears. And then as the dry land appears, He brings forth all the herb-bearing seeds. The herbs that bear seed, I guess that's the way I'm trying to say it. The vegetation, all that grows from the earth, He brings that forth. And then on the fourth day, He creates the sun, the moon, and the stars. And again, all of these things have a purpose. God did not create anything frivolously. It all had a purpose And all of it is going to be used to fulfill His ultimate purpose one more time of glorifying Himself. Now, ultimately, the ultimate glory of God is what? It is Jesus Christ in His death, burial, and resurrection. But again, we'll get into that as we go along. But right now, laying the foundation for all that's coming in the future. So He creates the sun, the moon, and the stars. And then on the fifth day, what does He create? Well, all that pertains to the seas and the waters, the fishes, and all of those animals that live in the sea, and it brings forth the fowl of the air and all the flying creatures of the earth. And then on the sixth day, we get down to verse 24, and God said, "Let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind." He's already brought forth the herbs, the grass, all the vegetation that's going to be necessary to support all of the animals that He's going to bring forth upon from the earth. "Let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beasts of the earth after his kind." And it was so. Once more, we read that phrase, don't we? "And it was so." Nothing is going to defy the will of God. Whatever He says, it's going to be so. Whatever He says in this book, it is so. That's a very simple phrase, isn't it? And yet it is very profound, very absolute. It just is. "And he that would please God must first believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him." But He is. It is so. And it was so. Nothing has ever changed, has it? Still the same. "And it was so." And the other phrase that we see and has been repeated every time at the end of each creative day, with the exception of the second day. The second day, He did not say, "And it was good." Now, we covered that already, and I'm not going to go back through that again. But if my understanding is correct, it's simply because when He separated the waters from above the earth were for what purpose? Well, for wars and judgments. And so I think He withheld that phrase, "And it was good," or He saw that it was good. Now, nevertheless, it was still good because God is good, and everything that He does is good. When Jesus was up on the earth, it was said of Him, and He went about doing what? He just went about doing good. He didn't do anything else but good, because God is good. But the other 5 days, God always says, "And He saw that it was good." And as we will see at the end of the sixth day, He will say, "Well, it's very good."
There was only good herbs there too.
Yeah, right.
Good for people and the animals.
At that point, there was no weeds as we would call them today. No thorns, no thistles. There wasn't any crab grass or bitter weeds or all that.
No lightning and thunder.
No lightning, that's right. No thunder, no storms. Everything was tranquil. And it's going to be that way again, isn't it? Twice we are told, once in the 11th chapter of Isaiah and once in the 65th chapter of Isaiah, and they shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain. It's going back that way. In fact, if it could be better, I think it'll be even better than it was in this Garden of Eden. But we're getting to a little bit ahead of ourselves, but not much. So he says, let the earth bring forth. And God made the beast of the earth, verse 25, after his kind, the cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. Okay, so now everything has been created that's necessary for the environment of man. As we've said, God is a God of order. He wouldn't create the man without having a place to put him. He wouldn't create the man without having something there to sustain him. He wouldn't create the man without having something for that man to do. In other words, a purpose for him. Even before man sinned, he still was a working being. As we'll see later on,
he gave that to him to keep him busy.
He kept him busy, but why, JT? There's satisfaction in working. And man did not, and we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but man in originally did not mind working. In fact, he enjoyed working. After the fall, well, things were a little bit different then, weren't they? But it was all because of sin. It wasn't because that work was any the less good and profitable and enjoyable if a person has the right mind and the right spirit.
And he became covetous. So he didn't want what he had, wanted something else.
Was not content, was he? And JT talked about that contentment a couple of weeks ago. But nevertheless, now everything is prepared for the last act of creation as far as the earth and the contents of the earth is concerned. There is one more act of creation that's going to come later on. But what is that? Well, I guess I really should say two acts of creation. One of them had to do, and we'll read that here. One had to, well, not here, but over in, what is it, chapter 2, I believe. One had to do with the thorns and the thistles, so to speak. But then the last act of creation, as far as this present earth and its inhabitants are concerned, is the act of the creation of a new heart. Now, what is the last act of creation? Any Anybody have a... That's it. God is going to create the new heavens and the new earth. Behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing. So, but now we're at the beginning, not at the end of it, but we are at the beginning. So now we're down to the place where man comes upon the scene. In verse 26, he says, "And God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, for you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat." And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was what? Very good. Now, who's going to argue with God? I hope none of us. Brother Bruce was talking about, I think his physics professor or something that was making fun of the rainbow or something, but that's all right. He will. He'll find out soon enough, if he hasn't already, that it's not to be made fun of. God is not to be mocked. Whatsoever a man sows, that he shall also reap. So find out, if he mocks God, God will mock him. So it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his works which he had made. Now I'm just reading those two verses there to complete the thought. But again, Brother Bruce is going to take that up next Lord's Day. We're expecting, Lord willing. But right now, we're talking about God as he made man. Now again, you notice when he talks about the firmament and gathering the waters together, the dry land appearing, and all of those things, the vegetation coming, and the sun, the moon, and the stars, and all of these, this creation up until mankind, God just says, let it be. The psalmist just says that he spoke, and it was. He commanded, and it just stood fast. It was there. But now we get down to man, and there's a different terminology. And it says, let us make man. Now, God could have spoken. spoken just like he did the rest. Because what is man made of? Well, the dust of the earth. So he could have done that, but he didn't, because there is a certain dignity to man, and that dignity is that man was made in the image of God. There is something very special about man. And it's first and foremost going to be that in man, God is going to be glorified. Now, does the rest of creation show forth the glory of God? Well, yes, it does. But there is a special way in which God is going to be glorified in man. And consequently, he makes man in the image of himself. Now, there's a lot of debate, you know, well, what does it mean that man is made in the image of God? What is that image? Well, one thing we do know that it's not. We do know that man is not made, as far as the body is concerned, in the image of God. Why? How do we know that? God is a spirit. Now, God did take upon himself, through the Son, the image of man, in as far as the body is concerned. But man could not be made in the image of God as far as the body is concerned. You know, it's a very interesting thing that even Jesus, nobody has ever known since the days of Jesus what he looked like. There are no pictures. He did not have any coins struck with his image upon those coins. Nobody made any statues of Jesus. There are no images of Jesus in his earthly form when he was here upon the earth.
That are true.
Well, there's imaginations, but that's not the image. That's the image of somebody's imagination.
But,
well, there's all kinds of idols out there, but nobody wrote down all of his features except God. Now, God did write down his features, right? In the 53rd chapter of Isaiah, we have, as far as I know, the only description that there is of Jesus. In the 53rd chapter, first of all, Isaiah says in verse 1, "Who hath believed our report, and unto whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant, as a root out of a dry ground. He hath no form nor comeliness, and when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him." Now, that's the only description that we have of Jesus in all the Bible, or in secular history. There is nothing that man knows. Michelangelo painted a picture of him up there on the Sistine Chapel, but that's just Michelangelo's imagination. This is what he thought he might look like. And there have been, like has already been said, there have been thousands and thousands of millions, I guess, of pictures made of Jesus. But you know, all the way back, well, I say all the way back, it's actually over in this time in Deuteronomy. We find in verse 6 of chapter 5, God says, I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. Thou shalt have none other gods before me. And then he says, thou shalt not make thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the waters beneath the earth. Thou shalt not bow thyself down unto them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God. There's to be no images made. You can't make an image of God. You can't make a picture of God. It's not possible to make a picture of God because He is a spirit. But that's really what man is trying to do in all of his idol worship. He's trying to make an image of God that he can see with his natural eye. He needs something. Man needs something in his natural state. He needs something that he can that represents God that he can see with the physical eye. But we don't need that, do we? Now, then if that's not what the image of God is, what is this image that man is made in like God? Well, first of all, I don't think it's really that difficult to answer. Because what God is doing in salvation, in the salvation of man, He is bringing man back into what? In relationship to Him, He is bringing back into that image.
Yes.
For whom He predestinated them. Well, I'm not getting that right. I better just turn over here and get it right so we'll have it. Romans chapter 8 is what we're talking about. For whom He did foreknow, He did also predestinate to be conformed to the image of His Son, that He might be the firstborn among what?
Many brethren.
Now, what is Jesus in relationship to God? He is God, isn't He? And so the writer of Hebrews tells us in the first chapter of Hebrews, speaking of Jesus in verse 3, he says, who being the brightness of His, God's, glory, and the express, what?
Image
of His
person.
So this is what it's all about, isn't it? And so in 1 John chapter 3, John says that when we shall see Him, what's going to happen? We shall be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is. So there's no question in my mind but what that this image was the uprightness of God. In other words, he was without sin. But besides that, he had the ability to reason. He had the ability to think logically. He wasn't like the animals that just do everything by instinct. You realize that animals will do nothing outside of what they instinctively do. Now, you can train them to some degree, but ultimately, they always revert back to that instinct. But they're not reasoning when they do that. They're doing what they come naturally to do. But so does man, right? But their natures are different. God has given man the ability to reason. And in the beginning, he had a right reason. Now, again, one of the things that is accomplished in salvation is having a sound mind, right? In 2 Timothy, chapter 1, in verse 6, the apostle says, "Wherefore I put thee in remembrance that thou stir up the gift of God, which is in thee by the putting on of my hands. For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." Now, in the beginning, then when God made man, he made him in his own image, a thinking being, a reasoning being. He had a sound mind. But sin destroyed all of that to a great degree. Now, the image of God was not totally destroyed in man by sin, but when man sinned, he did die spiritually, and all that God had made that was of his image was corrupted. And thus we have this again, corruption. Is what we were said this morning. In salvation, in that final day of redemption, this corruption is going to put on incorruption. Now, it's one of the things, again, that's about Jesus. When they buried him, what was said about his being dead? He's going to see no corruption. We're going to be made like Jesus. We're going to be returned to the exact perfect image of God. Now, the difference is going to be And this, again, is hard, it's difficult. In fact, I guess it's impossible for us to truly comprehend it. But the difference is going to be that in the end, there's going to be no flesh and blood. There not only is going to be incorruption, but once again, there's going to be immortality. For immortality is brought about by what? Through the gospel. We need to understand that man was made in the beginning, but in the end, he is created. He was made in the image of God, in that, again, he was able to think. He was, in the beginning, he was upright. Now, let me say this, that many people today think that man, when he was first made, was holy. And Brother Bruce and I have talked about that to some degree, and we agree that man was never holy. That's not part of the image of God in which he was made, because if he were made holy, then he would have remained holy. But he was made flesh and blood. And he was made flesh and blood specifically for one reason. That he could fall into sin.
Could Adam and Eve prior to the fall have pleased God?
Could they have pleased God? Well, I don't
they
think
did
in
as long as they were obeying, they were pleased.
Well, in a sense, but in
he walked with them in the garden.
He talked with him, right? There was a certain
close to them, evidently.
Yes, he walked. He talked to them. He came down, so to speak. But there is a special way, though, in which the redeemed of the Lord are pleasing to Him. I believe in a way that Adam and Eve, in their natural state, could not be, because they were flesh and blood. And again, man in his salvation, in the salvation of God, he again is restored to keeping of the law, not in the letter, but in the spirit of it, which Adam and Eve were never capable of doing. They weren't capable of doing it from the very beginning. Now again, they were made upright, and we'll get into that later. But they were made upright, but they were not holy. What does it mean by being made upright? It simply means that God made them without sin. God didn't bring them into this world or make them sinners, but He made them flesh and blood. And again, it all comes back to the obedience to the law. For what flesh and blood cannot do, for what the law could not do because of what? The weakness of the flesh. God sending His Son for sin and in the likeness of sinful flesh condemned sin in the flesh. Now, Romans chapter 8 and verse 3, I believe. Again, it poses a lot of questions, but we don't have time today to answer those questions. Could God have made man where he could not sin? Well, if he couldn't, then what hope have we in the future? God is going to make his people one of these days where we cannot sin. He made his own son. When he came in the flesh, he made his own son. He could not sin. Now, let me say this. Again, there's a debate goes on about, well, could Jesus be tempted? And some say, well, no, Jesus couldn't be tempted. He couldn't sin. He was God. He couldn't sin. Well, I don't believe that he could sin, but he could be tempted. And the Bible says it very plainly. He was tempted like as we are, yet without sin. So we have to be a little bit careful in these things because they're very, very intricate things. And if you're not careful, you can mistake one thing for another and not get the point. But in the likeness, this is the likeness of God. In that, first of all, he was without sin in the beginning. He could reason. Now, that's what Adam and Eve were doing. As we'll get to that again, not very far down the road, right? But when Satan tempted Eve, was she reasoning this thing out?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was. The only problem is she reasoned wrongly, didn't she? But they could reason. And again, some people say, well, Adam and Eve had a free will in the beginning.
Yeah, that's the way they reasoned it out.
But if it had been truly free, they would have eaten of the right tree instead of the wrong tree. So anyway, I think we can see that what God is doing in salvation is returning us to that very image of himself as it is in Christ Jesus. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Verse 5. For we preach not ourselves, but Christ Jesus the Lord, and ourselves your servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, has shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of God in what? The glory of God, rather, in the face of Jesus Christ. So that's the image that we are being brought back to. And as we've already read, God has predestinated us to be conformed to the image of his Son, who is the brightness. He's the brightness of God. He is the, well, I wouldn't say exact, but that's not the express the express image of God. Now, God does this, and He puts the man there in the garden, and He gives him power or dominion over everything. There's nothing that man cannot conquer as far as the world, the rest of the creation of God is concerned. People are amazed that you can go to the moon or whatever. Who knows? Man may go to Mars one of these days. But he won't find the life of God there. All it will do is just puff him up in his knowledge. But God is bringing us into His image, and He has made all things of this creation for the benefit of man. Isn't that marvelous? That's amazing. But once again, the problem was not with God. The problem was that man began to worship the creature more than the Creator, who is God blessed forever. And who is that Creator? It's Jesus. Well, we could, of course, say a lot more about this, but I hope we've got the gist of it and give us something really to think about. But God is bringing us back into the image of Himself. And when He does, there'll be no more Satan, be no more temptation. We will be perfect indeed in every sense of that word. All right, well, we'll look forward to then next Lord's Day and a lesson that Brother Bruce is preparing for us. And it's going to be not only interesting, but it's going to be very, I believe, extremely important. Because one of the images that was destroyed in the fall was the true worship of God. And that's what the seventh day, the Sabbath, is all about. It's about the worship of the Lord. Enjoying God. And I won't go any further into that. I'll let Brother Bruce set all that forth as the Lord leads him, and again, as long as it takes.
Were you going to mention something about
Louisiana? I forgot about that. I'm thinking about the Lord, not thinking about so much the rain. But, of course, we have some brothers and sisters in Louisiana that have been profoundly affected by those floods over there. Brother Mark LaCour, who is a pastor of one of our churches, our sister churches in Baton Rouge, and some of his family. And the church itself, the church was, I think they said, about 4 feet of water in the church building. And Brother Mark and his wife, Rebecca, lost their house and 2 cars and everything practically that they had. And I believe 2 of the daughters were affected by that flood. We don't know how many or what of their church family there that was affected, but they are asking if anyone has a few dollars that they would like to send to help relieve that situation, it would be greatly appreciated. So
I think the understanding was if they did not could not get insurance, I don't know how long they lived there, but they could not get insurance because it was low, they just in later years qualified as low land. They've all been there for a long time, and they said that it had rained in places that, you know, this has never happened before. So
we're hearing a lot of that lately. It seems like that where it's never flooded before, it's flooding now. So, but anyway, just leave that with you.
And give it to Brother Jerry next Sunday or whenever you want to. And there's a GoFundMe account, or it can be sent directly to the church so that they can get it. And that way they get all of it. So, whatever.
Does anybody know anything about that GoFundMe thing? They're bound to take a cut out of it. I don't know how much, but
remember them doing that with Brother
Turning Bear and Lynn.
So it's better to send it to the people.
If we can. All right, let's stand in number 54. Another one of our hymns that Brother Watts wrote a few years ago, to the glory of God and the glory of His creation.